Chapter 184. "This," she thinks, "is where Blackwall or Bull or Cullen or someone would yell at a soldier or a recruit to dig deep, keep their chin up." But Llewellyn is not a soldier, and she doesn't think she'd be a very good one if she was, because she wants nothing more than to sleep. It's cold, and she knows it's the snow and the hurt and the weakening of her core. She knows it's all of those things. The loss and the fire and the avalanche and Haven and the dragon and Corypheus and the Templars made of lyrium. It's all of those things dragging her down. And it's also the mark on her palm and the strange new violent way it pulses. Possessive and angry. Inflamed. The one hot thing in these mountains. A bitter sun embedded into her bones. She prays through half-numb lips, more like cold whispers and whistles that she barely hears in her own head, because it's so full of loss and whiteness. Llewellyn can't lift her legs very well anymore. Or those eyes in the dark. Templars or wolves? "Dread wolf, take you," Llewellyn thinks at Corypheus. The Dread Wolf is good at taking gods away. The Dread Wolf hunts the clans first, and Llewellyn doesn't have her ring to keep her safe. She gave it back to Keeper before she left for the conclave. Her hand had felt naked without it, bare and exposed. She felt exposed, half not Llewellyn anymore. She had passed it on to the second, just in case. They all knew she might not be coming back. Llewellyn's insides are too cold for twisting. Is that glowing eyes in the dark? Is the wind a howl, a roar, a dragon coming down at her back? Another mountain? Llewellyn feels tight with awareness. She could have died. She was truly lucky. Mithal, Algernon, Gilinane, Falandin. She doesn't know who to thank for that. Llewellyn prays to Mithal that the Inquisition is safe. She prays to Algernon that she hurt Corypheus' army as much as he hurt her people. And if not, then she gets the chance at it. She prays to Gilinane that she will rise to the demand set before her and become worthy of what she must do now. Corypheus is her battle. She is not an usurper. She is not a gnat. She is no mistake. Llewellyn is only herself, and no one can take this from her. She prays to Falandin, because she is not yet ready to leave this world. She prays to Dirthamen to shelter her with his ravens, to Selyse, that wherever her people now are, that they can be sheltered and are well, to June, that some sort of solution can be found, to Andruil, for a path, to the wolf, for everything else. Let me live. Let me hurt those who hurt me. Let me make it. Let me make this right. Let me survive this. Let me swallow this happening whole and make it part of my settling bones. Let me walk in your footsteps of shadows, wear your cloak of tricks. Let me hunt my enemy and circle my kin. It is tempting to change faces here. Become bear, become wolf, become owl. To become a wild thing once more and survive that way. But she cannot think of herself as anything other than Llewellyn on two legs, anchor in one hand and wolf's heart in her chest, uncertain and trapped in this skin. Llewellyn breathes, and she only knows she breathes because she is not dead yet. Or if she is, this is not what she hoped it would be like. "Fire? Warm?" Llewellyn whispers when she sees the eyes that were burning in the snow up close. Ashes. Is it warm? She does not know. She cannot tell. But if this was here, and it is not yet covered in snow, then they must be onward. Llewellyn breathes in deep enough it hurts, digs deep for whatever is left inside, and prays to the wolf to see her through this, because of every god she has ever known, The wolf is the only one to remain among his chosen people and see them and their fate through to the very end. If this were another time, another age, when he was another elf, if many, many things had changed while somehow remaining the same, because he doubts that he would have met her under any other circumstances, known her, been with her, been changed by her, been made so aware of her. She would have been his. He would have claimed her as his own, made her first among those he gathered to himself, and those who came freely. He would have named her Fenaste, his gift, his treasure, special and blessed. And when he became Fenharel, rather than just the wolf, he would have named her Fendami, the wolf's sword, because she has always struck fast and quick and deep with words and actions, and looks without need of anything or anyone else. He holds her hand in his, watching the glowing echo of the fade playing out on her palm, slender and young in his hands. He runs his thumb over the Venus mound of her left hand, soft muscle and flesh and skin. She sleeps as Cole guides her away from nightmares and as he eases her pain, the drawing of her eyebrows. Is this how Mithal, now Flemeth, thinks when she looks into the faces of her many innumerable daughters, this heavy, terrible, tired love? The sorrow that these daughters of theirs, their treasures and dear ones, could have had so much and now must deal with so little? That they were born for the world and for magic and for dreams, but are limited to this? Diminished and drawn apart, diluted and drained to these shadow-like imprints. And the guilt, the heavy, heavy guilt that seems heavier for having known them than anything else. It makes it hurt more, knowing her. Solas presses his thumb to the center of the anchor, feels it reaching for him. Does she realize that it is not because he is a mage and a dreamer that he is capable of soothing the mark? Defer, Dorian, they would not be capable of this. Only he. Her fingers slowly close around his, soft mutterings of something in the new and strange elven that the Dalish have somehow derived from rough and distorted patchworks of the old tongue. Solas brushes a hand over her hair. It is selfish of him to think of her thus, precious and beloved. Student is acceptable. Apprentice is fine. Dalen is somewhat selfish on his part, but within the bounds of appropriate. Lethalon edges against that line. But he is the wolf, and the wolf has always been ambitious and arrogant and overreaching. So he reaches and takes that as his, even though he should not. If she knew, he doubts she would allow him to claim that bond between them. Dalen and Lethalon both. Lethalon more, perhaps. Ah, but the usurpation of father as well? Even Solas knows that goes too far. Inappropriate and beyond any excuse. Selfish beyond measure. He is amazed at how selfish it is, exactly. He supposes he can surprise even himself at times. He can imagine Mithal's voice in his ear, laughing at how much he's changed, how soft he's become. Rescuing pups now, Fenfalon? Solas conjures her face in his mind, and half replies, and you, with your innumerable hatchlings, creating a brood? He wonders how she deals with letting them all go. She has been awake longer than he has. How has she dealt with losing them, one after another, to the passage of time that has yet to truly touch them? Mithal, old friend, he thinks, I could certainly use some of your advice right now.